Call the meeting to order. I'm sorry, we're getting started a little bit late this morning. We have one bill on the agenda, which happens to be my bill, and I'm going to ask Representative Lane to take over the chair of the committee. And we also have the opportunity, if there are any folks who want to comment on our bill from yesterday on housing, I'd be glad to do that. And we will, that bill will be coming up again next week for an actual vote. But for the moment, I did say yesterday that if there was someone who really wanted to weigh in again on the housing bill that we had yesterday, you're welcome to do that today, or you can again do it next week. We do have with us some young folks today from the Southwest Junior High School in Forest Lake, the ninth grade students. Welcome to the committee. You want to stand up and let us welcome you, please? So, Representative Lane, would you take? Not yet. No. We're getting there.
All right, looks like we'll be moving forward with House File 3519. Representative Clark will present.
Thank you, committee members. I'm really pleased to bring this bill before you, 3519, which is a bill that, again, it's relating to the public health mission of our committee. And what we're talking about here is improving the quality of the monitoring that's happening at the Perry Island nuclear plant, both in terms of radiation monitoring and in terms of heat discharge. Both of those discharges from the Perry Island plant have been things that the people who live closest to that community, specifically the Perry Island tribal community, but also folks downstream, have been very, very concerned about, and they have raised those issues in a number of different venues, and we'll be hearing about that today. And it is our job as a public health division to look at those kinds of issues and make recommendations and, in this case, hopefully pass some laws that will improve the opportunity for the people who live there to be have their health monitored. So in the first section of this bill, we're establishing a working group and that whose job is to make recommendations about improving the monitoring network of the radioactive emissions from Perry Island Nuclear Plant and the spent storage there. The bill defines who's on the working group. We think it's complete. If you have other thoughts about that, let us know. And it requires that group to do the kind of networking that would then be reported back to us and to the state. The report is supposed to come back to the legislature by February 1 of next year with their recommendations. Secondly, there's a monitoring network that would be looked at for the thermal discharges from the Perry Island Nuclear Plant. And the Commissioner of Health, there we say, would contract with one of the experts that we know about at the University of Minnesota, St. Anthony Falls Laboratory, or other independent experts to develop a plan to monitor those thermal discharges. And we'll hear about the reasons for that from some of our witnesses. That would be a report that we would get this fall, November 15th. And then there is a blank appropriation here, both from the utility that owns the plant, in other words, Xcel, we will be hearing from them today, and also from the special revenue fund that was established when the CAS were expanded a number of years ago. So, Mrs. Chairman, and members, I'd like to ask for some testimony from some of the witnesses here who can talk with us about this. And I think we'll start with our representative from the tribal community at Perry Island. And I should say, committee members, that we found out this morning this bill will need to go to government operations after this hearing today, so that would be the motion where we would be sending it.
Okay, welcome to the committee, and state your name and proceed.
My name is Jody Ganst. I'm sorry, my name is Jody Gams. I am a tribal member of the Prairie Island Indian Community and also the government relations specialist for the Prairie Island Indian Community. Thank you, Chairwoman and committee members. I'm just going to read a letter on behalf of the Prairie Island Indian Community. It's a letter of support to the committee, and I believe you all have copies of that. I'm just going to touch briefly on a couple of the key points that the community would like to point out. On behalf of the Prairie Island Indian Community, we would like to thank Chairwoman Clark for introducing House File 3519 and for her sincere interest in the impact of the operations of the Prairie Island Nuclear Generating Plant and its independent spent fuel storage installation on our community. The Prairie Island Indian Community is among the closest communities in the nation to a nuclear power plant and its above-ground nuclear waste storage site. The plant's 26 large cement nuclear waste storage casks currently sit just 600 yards from our homes, and a significant number of our homes, clinics, church, community center, offices, and facilities are within 1 mile of the twin nuclear reactors. Since it went online in 1973, the plant has been a major concern to our community members with respect to safety, health, and environmental issues. A number of issues related to the operation of the plant have heightened our concerns, including two radiological leaks at the plant, which is now among the oldest operating nuclear plants in the United States, ongoing tritium leaks and contamination. Tritium was originally detected in our residential wells in the late 1980s, and recent NRC findings that criticize declining human performance at the plant. The Nuclear Energy Institute implemented a groundwater protection initiative in 2007 to address the widespread problem of tritium leaks at nuclear power plants all across the country. One quarter of nuclear plants around the country, including the Prairie Island Nuclear Generating Plant, are leaking tritium. As the Union of Concerned Scientists explained in a 2006 petition to the NRC, these leaks were initially undetected and remained undetected for as long as 12 years. In at least one case, the leak was not detected until after an underground plume of several million gallons of contaminated water traveled beyond the nuclear facility's site into drinking wells. In most cases, the leak was finally detected more by happenstance than by rigorous monitoring. In all cases, a small leak undetected for an extended period of time permitted large amounts of contaminated water to enter the ground around the facilities. We agree with the Union of Concerned Scientists that the public health stakes are simply too high to leave this issue unsettled. These problems shouldn't be ignored or minimized. We want to make sure that the best, most accurate, and most sensitive equipment available is used to monitor all releases and emissions. Improved monitoring is needed to ensure that leaks of radioactively contaminated water are detected immediately before large plumes spread and contaminate groundwater, surface waters, aquifers, and drinking water. House File 3519 is an important step in the right direction for addressing our community's concerns about the ongoing environmental and health risk to our community. It establishes a working group to study the radioactive emissions and thermal discharge from the plant, to design a better comprehensive and continuous monitoring network using appropriate monitoring technologies, and to provide recommendations to implement the improvements to the monitoring network. This includes the tribe as a member of the working group. We would welcome the opportunity to participate in this effort and look forward to working with all of you. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions, members? Could you just tell me the tritium? Is that a radiation? Could you describe more what that is and the effect on people?
I'm actually not in a position to answer what tritium is. From what I understand, it is something that leaks from the cast, and it has been found in our groundwater, and that is all that I'm aware of.
All right, thank you, Representative Severson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And that question was along my same lines. I'm wondering if that's a gamma particle, alpha particle, if it's leaking from the casks, if it's in the process, if it's an element, is it detrimental to health? Has there been proven studies that this is detrimental to the health? And I think those are some questions that would have. Perhaps there's somebody who could address those issues.
Madam Chair, we'll have that in some other testimony that's coming forward. We'll be hearing from some folks.
Representative Morgan?
If somebody's going to come down and answer the question from a testimony standpoint, I'll withhold my answer then. Thank you. no need to get into geek mode.
I would say that it sounds like you're a unwitting health study.
Correct.
All right. What?
Madam Chair, are there any other questions for this witness? If not, maybe ask for Kristen.
Thank you.
Paula McAbee, you're here. Great. Yeah, thank you. I'm really happy you got here.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Go ahead. State your name.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Paula McAbee, and I represented the Prairie Island Nuclear Generating Plant Study Group, primarily pro bono, over a long period of trial and hearings. And the information that I obtained about radiation is primarily from experts. The Prairie Island Indian community talked to me and talked to our study group about the fears they have, legitimate fears, being basically the guinea pigs living next to this nuclear plant. And they referred me to some folks in California that do that create monitoring equipment for their business. And I asked them, I don't know enough to evaluate radiation monitoring. Do you have any experts you'd recommend? And I hope that you have in your packets the letter from James T., otherwise known as Tom Voss. He was a volunteer expert who provided Judge Lewis in the administrative proceeding with a letter explaining what is needed and what is missing from radiological monitoring. And if you don't have a copy of that letter, I know I would be happy to make sure that the committee does get copies. Because what Mr. Voss said, and I had a chance to meet with him because he came to Minnesota to give a lecture at a meeting of the Health Physics Society, and he gave a talk, which I went to, though I didn't understand anything of it. It went right over my head. But he sat down with us and explained that although the health department has tried to fill in a little bit of the gaps, there still is really inadequate monitoring of the radiation impacts of the Prairie Island nuclear plant. And first, the thing that he emphasized first is that their air quality monitors, they only have one control location and four non-control, to identify the plume of radiation. And what he suggests as the standard of the art, that he's now working on rules to make apply to all the nuclear plants, but their rules are in process, is to have a whole ring of these air monitors around a nuclear plant and then have further monitors further out so that when there is a release, that it would be possible to determine what the plume is of radiation and to get continuous information about that. That's a big gap. Also, I know it's a huge concern of the Prairie Island Indian community, the amount of tritium that is going into groundwater. But there's also concern about surface water, namely what's happening to all the radiation that's going into the Mississippi River. There's only one place where that's monitored, and that's down by the Lock and Dam about a mile away. And what both the University of Minnesota said regarding heat and Dr. Voss said about radiation is that there should be more monitors than that. Now, with I'm not an expert on radiation, so I'll give you my best shot. This is not gamma radiation. This is alpha and beta radiation that is going up in particles in the air and in the water. The gamma radiation is the radiation from the continuous storage of the independent spent fuel facility, the high-level radioactive waste that's put into casks on that pad. And the environmental impact statement actually did a really good job of analyzing what they call skyshine radiation. What that means is the gamma radiation goes through, even though there's cement encasements of this spent fuel, the gamma radiation goes through that, and it goes up to the atmosphere and bounces off. And that's called skyshine radiation because the molecules are going up and bouncing down. And in general, the Minnesota Health Department, and I think Representative Clark has had a role in that, they've enacted rules saying that the acceptable lifetime cancer risk is 1 in 100,000. And by the time that the nuclear power plant runs for another 20 years and then is decommissioned, the level of exposure from that skyshine radiation will be 35 in 100,000, namely 35 times what the health department usually considers to be the acceptable lifetime cancer risk. So monitoring of not only the alpha and beta radiation in the air and in the water, but the gamma radiation from the high-level nuclear waste that's going to be stored basically indefinitely next to the Prairie Island Indian community is a big priority. Now, Tom Voss put in a number of details for how that monitoring should be done. In consultation with Representative Clark and the House research staff, they said, don't try and impose exact standards at a legislative level. Set up a process that will work so that those will be scientifically determined by the health department, an independent health physicist, members of the community, including the Prairie Island community and some of the downstream people. And that's the model in this bill today, which is possibly less aggressive than what I had hoped for, but I think it's probably also more rational than I would have hoped for, because it gives a chance for the experts away from the, you know, the microphones to sit down and say, well, what's working and what's not working with the monitoring, and then to improve it and get as much information and have it transparently available to the community as possible. The second issue, which is that the thermal monitoring, that came into the case actually primarily, and I don't know if you have these letters either. I had a case this morning at the Court of Appeals, and usually I would have brought my own copies, and I didn't. But there are two letters from the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, and they may be already in your packets. One which is dated October 7th, 2008, and one which is August 21st, 2009. And in the Prairie Island nuclear generating plant case, the DNR raised the issue about thermal impacts to the river and to both the recreational values of the river, primarily having to do with ice on Lake Pepin, and also to the ecosystem. And the DNR suggested that better monitoring be done, and also that better technology be considered in terms of cooling the water before it goes into the river. And one of the members of the Prairie Island Nuclear Generating Plant Study Group, my client, has some expertise as an engineer and relationships with the University of Minnesota St. Anthony Falls Laboratory. And we met with them, and I actually learned for the first time that they're considered national, even international experts on this kind of monitoring. And they came up with some really clear ideas on how the monitoring of thermal impacts could be improved. The last study that was done goes back to the 1970s. And not only to provide good information about what's happening to the fish and what's happening to Lake Pepin ice, but to look at if the if Xcel is operating the plant and it's operating hotter, is it necessary to change the way in which the cooling system works so that the river doesn't have an adverse impact either on the aquatic system or on recreation? And so this bill suggests that either the St. Anthony Falls Laboratory, which is right in our backyard and is an expert, or some other similar expert, look at the issue of thermal impacts. If we're going to have a nuclear power plant, it shouldn't be diminishing the ecological and recreational value of the Mississippi River. So I do not presume to be an expert, but I think in the course, because we had a case, I got a chance to talk with the experts, and I believe this bill is really consistent with the evidence that came in and with the recommendations of the experts that we need to improve the monitoring, both to protect public health, particularly for the Prairie Island Indian community that's basically right on top of this plan, and also to make sure that there are no impacts, whether it's radiological or ecological, on the Mississippi River, and to safeguard the communities that might be a little further downstream from things like air impacts of radiation and also impacts of thermal pollution, which can be mitigated if we know exactly what's happening and we get updated scientific information. So I'd be happy to answer any questions, and I believe that this bill is a very positive step forward, and it may be taking baby steps, but they're reasonable and rational and important baby steps.
And I thank you. We'll just take a pause here to welcome the other group of ninth grade students from the Southwest Junior High School in Forest Lake. And if the ones who have just come in could stand, we'll give you a welcome. Members, any questions to the testifier? Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. McAbee, I'm just wondering, during all the time that the study group has been working on this, did you get information about other states? I know there are states in which people who are interested can go online and really monitor what's going on almost instantaneously in a daily situation. As far as this particular plant is concerned, would that be possible under the present monitoring system? What would it require to get the monitoring system up to speed with other states? Do you have any idea of how many states have reached that level already with monitoring of their nuclear plants? So I have two questions, I guess, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, Representative, I don't know how many states have moved forward. I apologize, Ms. Shorten, I'm barely seeing you. I'm not sure how many states have done what you recommend, but that was one of the things that Tom Voss said would be the best idea, that he's actually worked with the Department of Defense installation that did install monitors that are continuously monitored, work with the community. So it wasn't very expensive because community members assume the responsibility for changing the monitors. And then they put the information up on computer so that people, and maybe it will reassure people rather than scare them if the information is that there's not much radiation. But there, he is very aware and has helped design systems where the community helps with the cost of maintenance by doing it themselves, and the information is uploaded on computers so that people who are either worried about it or want to be reassured can plug into the computer and just see what's going on. And I think one of the positive aspects of this study group is that that would be a great place to get in all the information and get the best practices from whichever state is doing the best job.
Representative Benson.
Thank you. Just to follow up then, the present monitoring system that we have at Prairie Island would not be able to provide that information. Isn't that correct?
Ms. McAbee.
Madam Chair, Representative Benson, the present monitoring system that we have would not do that. Most of the monitors, I mean, just talk first about the spent fuel. Most of the monitors are not continuous. Excel's monitors are not continuous monitors, or rather they're checked intermittently. I think the health department has now two monitors, not a ring of them, that are continuous, but they're not linked to the internet. The information on emissions to the air and the water is not continuous as it is now either, and neither is the information about thermal pollution. So we would need to do some upgrading and reworking in order to accomplish the objectives you're recommending.
And Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'd just like to ask the author of the bill, would the bill, as it is presently written, provide such a upgrade for monitoring?
Representative Clark.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, what we're trying to do is have the group, the working group, come forward with the best recommendations. And I'm assuming that, you know, since Excel is making this major investment themselves in their own technology, that they would, and they should be on this working group. And I think that's a mission that we need to make sure gets changed here. Perhaps I can do that as we go along. Just noticed that. We want to make sure that we're matching that kind of adding to their technology with the kind of monitoring technology. And I would hope that that group would come forward with that. But we're not going to prejudge exactly what they would do. I just know that that is one of the kinds of common sense recommendations that I think make sense, you know, to have this continuous monitoring and to have it available to the public, especially the citizens who live so near, a few hundred yards away.
Thank you. Any other further questions? I would just make a comment that as I look at these letters, the one from the Department of Natural Resources on August 29th, 09, the last one in the packet, comment made that it said our determination that the analysis and description of the environmental impacts is insufficient for a large power generating facility that has the potential for negatively affecting the aquatic biota and public use of the Upper Mississippi River. And it just describes that it just had a brief narrative in some tables, but the result is that the reviewers have to accept the conclusions of Excel, and only if they're able to locate this information in the response document. So it sounds like we need a little more oversight.
Madam Chair, there are some more witnesses, and I do want to just indicate to members that I am going to make an oral amendment that makes sure that we have Excel on the establishment of the committee, the work group that's going to be coming. So I'll do that after we hear from our next witness, which I believe is Christine.
I'll stay with the question.
Okay. Thank you. And Ms. McAbee can stay for more questions if they come up. Ms. Tollefson?
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. State your name and go ahead.
Thank you. My name is Kristen Idy Tollefson, and I live in Florence Township, which is just downriver from Perry Island. And I've been involved as a citizen for following nuclear for about 15 years. I was on a former Citizens Advisory Task Force for the Environmental Quality Board when there was an effort to site waste away from the reactor. And my main goal, I'm going to just back up a little bit because my main goal is to draw a small piece of the complex picture that sort of affects our worldview about monitoring as downstream communities who have spent the better part, actually, of 2 years working with the Public Utilities Commission process of reviewing Xcel's applications to upgrade the plant that is run it with hotter fuel, with higher percentage of uranium, and to expand the storage pad for up to eventually 98 casks. There are now 24 on the casks. There would be, after decommissioning, 98 casks on the pad. So these are significant changes in what we have looking forward as communities. And also, I think that one of the things that changed the landscape for us tremendously as neighboring communities of the plant is the fact that Yucca Mountain has been taken off the table. Mm-hmm. So despite all the billions of dollars that have been spent and the promises that have been made for over 35 years, we are in fact, in a sense, further from a permanent repository, from a permanent solution to the waste than we were years ago. And so this is why the communities are so anxious that the opportunity, as Xcel is spending, I think, a total over 20 years, if I remember correctly from the proceeding, of about $1.3 billion, putting that into the plant over about 20 years, or something in the $700 million to actually prepare the plant to run another 20 years. The host and neighboring communities believe that this is the perfect place to be really doing state-of-the-art upgrades for monitoring. It's the time to make an investment in state-of-the-art, real-time, as Representative said, independent and publicly accessible monitoring. Some of the rest of the background story, I know, not being an expert, it's become so common to refer to nuclear as clean energy that I think by this we mean more that it does not have the operational emissions associated with fossil fuel plants, CO2, SOx, NOx, etc. But it's not always understood that nuclear plants do have regular emissions, and that these emissions are a variety of chemical and radiological elements that are expelled, as Ms. McAbee was talking about, either in gaseous form into the air or into the water. The plant also requires millions of gallons a day of river water to be circulated through the system to cool the plant, and this water is hot in several senses. And the purpose of the tall cooling towers is to reduce the heat of the water going back into the river, but this loop reduces plant efficiency, so they're used primarily as needed. A river ecosystem is an adaptive but a delicate thing, and we know an increasing amount about how water temperature can affect even sedimentation rates, as well as the growth, health, and reproductive cycles of flora, fish, and fauna. One of the specific thermal impacts that Lake City, as a downriver community, has expressed concerns about is ice, the ice cover, and how that might be affected or is affected. The operation of the plant, it's the operation of the plant's cooling system that creates tritium. Again, this is a non-expert's explanation, which is also expelled in the case of Monticello through the stack, I believe, or Prairie Island into the water. This is the radioactive element that's most often associated with the groundwater contamination, and as it mimics hydrogen, it's a radioactive form of hydrogen, it's very easily absorbed into all natural systems, and that makes it of a particular concern. Aging plants are particularly susceptible to leaking tritium, as in the recent Vermont Yankee case. These leaks can be difficult to track and monitor after they have left the plant until they turn up in a test well, and then, of course, everybody's very upset if the release is high, or if the count is high. As the Prairie Island Indian community testified, there has been enough concern that the nuclear industry is focusing some attention and research lately on this problem. So there are these different plumes from the normal plant operations, the emission streams that enter the air and the water, gaseous water and thermal. We know about the radiological elements that are released through monitoring that's required by regulation, primarily federal regulation, but we don't. It's much harder to tell where they go, where they end up. And testing goes on in the vicinity of the plant, but the plumes are intended to disperse the thermal and radiological pollutions downriver. The pathways of these plumes are modeled for accident conditions, but are not tracked for normal operational conditions or for incidents, which are not uncommon, accidental releases, which don't reach the threshold of accident conditions. All of this is before we get to the waste. While the reactor core is heavily shielded, once the fuel rods are spent, they are removed and replaced with new rods. They are very, very hot and must be cooled for eight years or more in the spent fuel pool. The uranium pellets in these rods remain hazardous and must be isolated from natural systems, not for hundreds, but for hundreds of thousands of years. And it is commonly held that deep geological burial is the only way to maintain this kind of isolation. Most nations have a repository program, but no nation has succeeded in opening a permanent repository. And in America, as I mentioned, over the last 2 years, assuring safe storage has gotten a lot more difficult as Yucca Mountain has been withdrawn from consideration, and there is no plan B for nuclear waste storage anywhere. So to go back to the current situation, Xcel applied to the NRC to relicense the plant for an additional 20 years, and just last November, the Public Utilities Commission granted permission to operate the plant and to expand the pool storage. That makes it the total of 98 casks after decommissioning that will now need to be stored on site on Capri Island on a concrete pad in welded casks that are designed for temporary storage and licensed for 25 years. There is no, we don't know when those will leave, so it's an indefinite storage period at this time. Imagine now that you are one of the host communities, or that you live downriver, draw your drinking water from the river, or shallow groundwaters that line the river valley. And I think they also handed out a map that shows you the groundwater contamination susceptibility for the river valley. I tried to get a color copy of this, but the entire area, most of Goodhue County, in fact, not just the river area, is very high contamination. Very quick contamination or high, which is just weeks to months. Somebody who I think you have that with you. So there is no more Yucca Mountain, and as a community member, you read a government accounting office report that was just released in November that analyzes the potential cost benefits to the federal government of leaving the waste at reactor sites for 100, 280, or 500 years. What do? You come to the legislature. And you ask for some help in putting safeguards in place that will accomplish a goal I know that we all have, that Xcel has, that the communities have, that the legislature has, and that the federal government has, that this waste should be safely stored and the plant should be safely run. The purposes of the bill are, as Representative Clark has said, is to evaluate the current monitoring and make recommendations for improvements, not to replace or replicate, particularly to increase community confidence, to involve and educate the host communities, and to improve public access to this data and analysis. And these are goals that are recommended not only in this bill, but by the nuclear industry itself, NEI, and the health physics community, which has been putting together some principles for stakeholder involvement in radiological monitoring. And they believe that these are very, very long-term. One of the statements is that these are very long-term issues that will require a lot more knowledge and involvement across time on local governments and others. You've heard about the recommendations from the health physicist and also the thermal monitoring program. So I would, in closing, say that while Xcel's current monitoring meets NRC requirements, there is significant room for improvement in community confidence and in monitoring programs. Both the industries see this as important to ensuring long-term institutional oversight of radiological exposures and effect. It is important to have all the stakeholders at the table so there can be coordinated evaluation of the kinds of comments that you have in your packet. When we were in the middle of the PUC proceeding, you know, these letters were coming in, these concerns were arising, and there was really no way, no venue, no table to bring those concerns together in a way that would actually enhance the design opportunities and monitoring opportunities. So this is how we see the opportunity of this bill, is to bring those parties to the table, and greatly appreciating Representative Clark's support for the bill and work on the bill and your hearing the bill. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. It seems like we have not known certain things around nuclear power plants and storage, and now as we have been, as I say, the unwitting participants, and some of you have been unwitting participants in a study that we didn't intend, now we should get that information. We should find out. We should start to look this over. It isn't a matter of hear no evil, see no evil, but we should get the education we need so we can act as educated adults on these long-term issues. How do we know how good this so-called clean energy can be to us if we don't have an awareness of what it's actually doing to us? We need this information, and I thank you for your testimony.
Exactly, Madam Chair.
Any questions, members? Representative Howes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Almost called you Senator Clark, but Representative Clark. Is there a Senate companion? First question.
Yes, there is.
Will you be bringing a fiscal note to finance?
Oh, yes. And I'm sorry that we don't have that yet. I was thinking that our testimony today would help us get those figures. We have requested a fiscal note, but we don't. And the fiscal note, as I understand, circulates to each of the agencies, and they make their recommendations, but we don't have those yet, and we have two stops. We'll be stopping at government operations, then we'll be stopping at the finance committee. So, yes, before we go much further, we will have that, hopefully.
Madam Chair, I've got two
yes.
more.
Representative House.
What I'm looking in a fiscal note is not your typical, but I'm looking at the rates that government will pay, increased rates that government will pay for electricity if this were to happen. In other words, the state, counties, cities, municipalities, if it would be a large rate increase, a small rate increase, and what the cumulative effect would be. I'd like to see that in a fiscal note. Two more questions. Have we met the deadlines, and we're okay with all that?
We're okay so far. This is a finance committee. We're fine here.
Okay.
We'll have to see, going to government operations, that'll be a special opportunity, put it that way. I'm not quite sure. we certainly would obey all the rules, and if we have to go through rules on that, we will. This will be a finance committee bill, and it'll be coming out of finance before it goes anywhere else. So,
okay. Madam Chair, just one final.
Yes, Representative House.
I've heard the word Yucca Mountain once or twice. I've heard the word storage, underground storage in different countries, but looking through the bill, there's nothing in here dealing with storage, so why are we talking about that?
Representative Clark.
Madam Chair, and I can let the witness respond too. I think the problem is that we're talking about all the discharges that come from the site, and the CAS themselves provide some discharges, as was being discussed earlier, and I think you were here. I'm not sure if you were, but anyway, those are the kinds of monitoring gamma rays and other problems that could happen there. Those are my understandings of why we're talking about Yucca Mountain, because the people who live, like Ms. Thompson and others, around those counties and downstream, and certainly the Prairie Island tribal community, may be dealing with this, may need to deal with it for hundreds of years. We don't know. We have not been able to come up with a permanent storage facility. Yucca Mountain comes up, the name comes up, because that has been, until recently, the most highly considered place to put our nuclear storage from all over the country. It's not going to happen, it looks like. So that's why that is being discussed. We may have, every state who has a nuclear power plant may have their own high-level nuclear storage opportunities right on site, and that's what we have in Minnesota right now. And the people who live near it are the ones who are actually asking us to consider better health monitoring and better thermal monitoring.
Madam Chair, she created one more small question with her answer. I think you should somewhere in the bill highlight that the monitoring should include the casks, because you don't say that. If you don't say it, then they're simply not going to do it. You know that. So
thank you. I think that's if we'll maybe I can get a little help on that from our staff and making sure that's in there.
Okay. And Representative Scott.
Thank Thank you, Madam Chair. I had more of a comment than anything. I think it's just important to remember when we're talking about the storage of the casks and Ryuka Melt and that whole thing is that the administration that we have in D.C. right now is not going to be there forever, and so there's always an opportunity for that to reopen.
And Representative Saylor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this question actually is for the author and probably for somebody else, but I wanted to make sure I had an opportunity to ask the question. And that is, with regard to Section 3, transfer the appropriation line 3.15, where the appropriation would be from revenues transferred to the renewable development account. If you have someone that will be testifying that could explain, you know, if they know at this point, a little bit more about, you know, if this is coming out of the renewable development account, what else doesn't get funded if this does? I think, you know, some of those implications, which wouldn't really come under a fiscal note, but, you know, I don't think that they would be there. But I'm just curious as to, you know, what they would, what anyone has thought about that. Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Representative Clark.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe I could just indicate that every year as a result of the settlement with Xcel, $16 million is put into that fund from Xcel. And I think what we're talking about with the study here is maybe, I don't know, $100,000 or something like that. I don't have the actual fiscal note, as I mentioned, yet. But we're talking about a small investment right now in trying to determine and help protect the public health of the people who live closest to this this plant and the source of discharge. And I don't know for sure what the other projects are that are in there. I think every single one of us would certainly have projects that we would hope would be funded. It's we're talking about things like wind energy and solar energy and those kinds of things for sure. And you may know some other projects that are funded out of the Renewable Development Fund. But I think what we're talking about here is a small investment to try to put together a working group and come back with some very clear, hopefully, recommendations for the public protection of the public health for all the people who live near Perry Island and actually for all of us. You know, I can tell you that when I got elected in 1980, I was actually campaigning out on the street when there was a rainstorm going over, and I found out 2 days later that there had been a leak at Perry Island. This is in 1980. And that was carried on the winds and, I presume, on the rain. You know, and I thought about that, and I thought, well, if I get into the legislature, I want to make sure that those of us who live nearby, even in a city like Minneapolis, not too many hours away, certainly receiving, potentially receiving some of the discharge from that plant, have a way to know right away. I might not have been out in the rain if there had been a continuing monitoring system, you know, available to us to let us know about it. So I just think there are ways that we can look at this that serve all of us, and I think it certainly this is a very important power plant to our state. We're going to be hearing from Xcel. They may be able to tell you more detail about some of the projects that have been or will be competing for funds. Oh, and I guess Ms. Tollefson has a comment.
Ms. Tollefson.
Madam Chair, Representative Saylor, I have actually had conversation with Bill Grant about this, who is interested in the question always of where the renewable development fund goes, and I'm sure that will be, that has begun to be discussed, but as Representative Clark said, it's not a large amount of money, but that is something we're thinking about.
Okay, Representative Severson.
Could I just follow up on that point?
Oh, Saylor, would you have a follow-up?
Yeah.
Okay, Representative Saylor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I really appreciate and certainly can see that this bill addresses a big need, and obviously monitoring something as crucial as emissions from any sort of a nuclear power plant is truly a very laudable thing and something that we want to do. I simply wanted to, you know, just find out just a little bit about the cost because I may not be able to hear all of the other ones, so I wanted to be sure I got that opportunity. Thanks.
Ms. McAbee.
Madam Chair, Representative Saylor, and I think that's a very legitimate question. This bill right now just funds the study, and I think it's a legitimate question when we come to the cost of monitoring whether an additional revenue stream would have to be designated based on the anticipated cost so that it wouldn't take a big bite of that renewable energy fund. And I think that that might not have been clear, that this revenue fund is only to get the study and the recommendations, And it is quite likely that additional revenue would have to be generated, but that's going to be part of the discussion here about what monitoring would cost and where it ought to be funded. So I think that's a very legitimate question.
All right. Representative Severson.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to make sure that I could get the amended language on the bill so members could see that, if we could just do that quickly. So with your permission, I'd like to ask our staff to just read some amended language, make sure that we have that.
Please go ahead.
Madam Chair and members, on page 2, after line 2, the amendment would be to insert clause 9, reading 1 representative from the Xcel Energy Prairie Island Nuclear Generating Plant, semicolon, and clause 10, one representative from each Pierce and Goodhue counties. And then renumber the clauses on lines 3 and 5.
Okay, does everybody have that? And are you just incorporating that in?
I would like to incorporate that, Madam Chair, yes. Thank you. I think it's aligned with what we were talking about earlier. Actually, I think that is an amendment to the bill. Maybe we should vote on that. Let's just go ahead and vote on it, then it's clear.
All right, to add that section on line 2.9 that includes some of the members of the working group, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion
Thank you, Madam.
Prevails. And I think we have Representative Susan finally.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to either of the testifiers. In terms of the release of radioactive materials that had taken place that I think Chair Clark had alluded to, do you have any further information on that? Because all the information that I've done on the research has been that there's never been a level of concern on releases of nuclear active material. Maybe I'm not getting the right information. Maybe you could kind of illuminate me on what that release constituted. How big was it? Was it a public threat?
Ms. McAbee?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think there are two questions. One, has there been tritium that exceeds background levels in groundwater? The answer is absolutely yes. Question is, what's the source of that? At this point, it's not even known. And that was one of the subjects that was discussed in the certification case, that there continue to be elevated levels of tritium in the groundwater at a couple of the wells in particular. As far as release of radioactive materials into the air and the water, I wish I had brought the application with me, because release of radioactive materials into the air is common during normal operations. It is more significant when the fuel rods are changed, but it is part of the normal operations of nuclear power plants, and the problem is, without continuous monitoring, we don't know the levels. It is also part of the normal operations of nuclear power plants to have radioactive materials released into the water. And that's not picocuries, it's curies. And the problem is that the way we have monitoring now in the river, we don't know the level, the time of that release. And I'm not saying that any of these releases have been untoward events, though possibly the release of the tritium may be a leak in the spent fuel pool or some other on site. But even without a catastrophic or hazardous situation, we believe there's a need to monitor what is going on into the air and the water. And that may be just normal releases, or in the future, it might be a situation of particular concern.
And just to follow up, Madam Chair.
All right. Representative Houston.
Yeah, and just these elements exist in the natural state in our environment currently. Is that correct?
Ms. McAbee?
Madam Chair, Representative, the element of tritium exists in the natural state. That is why when I was talking about levels of tritium that were concerned to the Prairie Island Indian community in particular, it's levels far above background levels. As far as the gamma radiation from the spent fuel, I'm not sure if that gamma radiation is something that exists in the background or at what levels. What I was relating to you was the information from the agencies in the environmental impact statement, that the levels of that gamma radiation are sufficient to increase risks of cancer over a lifetime. And so I think, as with x-rays, that there is a risk, and it's a risk from a kind of radiation that is higher than would be encountered in one's normal life.
Thank you. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Madam. Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a couple of questions. I'm wondering if the Department of Health, they're mentioned in here, Representative Clark, if we could hear from them.
Yes, I would hope we would hear from them.
Okay, thank you. I think somebody's here from the department. I'm wondering, Madam Chair, if just specifically, if they could address, I've heard your name mentioned a few times and some of the considerations. Could you confirm that the things we've heard in the department's role and what's been said so far, you're in agreement with? And then I have follow-up questions, too.
Yes, thank you. State your name and go ahead.
Madam Chair, my name is Linda Bremer. I'm Division Director of Environmental Health for the Minnesota Department of Health. And I brought with me a staff health physicist, Sherry Flaherty, from the health department. We welcome the interest in the monitoring around the nuclear power plant. We do not license the nuclear power plant. That's the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. And we do have a limited environmental monitoring program that I've asked Ms. Flaherty to talk to you about, if that would help.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Flaherty, state your name and go ahead.
I'm Dr. Sherry Flaherty with the Department of Health. I'm the health physicist there. Thank you, Madam Chair. The department does have a environmental monitoring program. They're used primarily to verify the monitoring program that's done by Xcel at the power plant. Under their NRC license, their nuclear regulatory license, they're required to have a very detailed environmental monitoring program. And the health department's role, as we see it, is just verifying that their data is consistent and is accurate. So we do monitoring around the independent spent fuel storage. We have gamma radiation monitors that are there that are monitoring real time. The data is sent to the Department of Health. We receive two reports daily. And if the monitoring there, if radiation levels are exceeded, there are several staff members that will receive direct email, pager, phone notification right away. And then if that monitoring system is lost, if the communication is lost between the monitors around the spent fuel storage and the computers that relay that information, if that connection is lost, we also receive messages. So there is real-time monitoring there. We also do limited air monitoring outside of the power plant, primarily in the downwind direction. We do surface water monitoring and well water monitoring. And then we have gamma radiation monitors that circle the plant. So we do have that kind of a program.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Flaherty, is that information available to the public that you get back, and in what form would it be available to the public?
Madam Chair.
Dr. Flaherty.
Madam Chair, Representative. That information is compiled annually, and we do publish a report that's online. We are in the process of publishing our 2009 data. As a matter of fact, it should be out next week. The department's public health lab does the processing of data, so we publish a limited amount of that information, but the data is readily available at any time through the department or through the public health lab.
Thank you. Representative McNamara?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just the last question, I believe. Do you share it with the Native American tribe currently? And if you don't, are you certainly open to sharing that with them on a regular basis?
Dr. Flaherty?
Madam Chair, Representative, we don't send that report to any specific group or individual, but we are absolutely willing to share it with anybody who requests it, or you know, we could on a regular basis send it out if that's a request that's made.
Thank you. Any further questions?
Madam Chair.
Representative Severson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just not necessarily to this witness, but my question would be towards the blank on the bill here has a fiscal note on that and how that's going to be generated, what kind of costs we've got, and perhaps we've got Xcel here who could determine what they estimate that cost would be.
All right. Representative Clark, would you like to have them?
Sure. I think it would be great to have Xcel come down. I would think, though, Representative Severson, the appropriate groups to tell us what that will be would not be the utility, but the agencies that will be responsible for bringing that together, namely the Department of Health. And they, Xcel would be part of the one of the groups, as we just added, made sure they were added today. But
right.
I think we have, I mean, we have requested a fiscal note to know what it would cost to convene this work group, and that's not Xcel's job to do. That's really our Department of Health's job to do.
And before we move on, Representative Benson has a question.
Thank you. Ms. Flaherty, I had asked a question before about monitoring that citizens in the area could monitor on a regular basis. So you had said that you'd be willing to share the monitoring results that you have. At what level would that monitoring level be? Would it be equal to what we see in other states where people can go online and on a regular basis see it? What kinds of what would be the level of monitoring that your department does that would facilitate citizens in the area to have a thorough understanding of really what was going on?
Madam Chair and Representative, the data availability is, there's a turnaround time to get our data back from the lab. Once we get it back, it's available at any time for anybody to review. And we could certainly access that data and have it available for the public. Week by week, month by month, that data may not be as meaningful as when we compile the annual report, and that's typically why we publish it as an annual report. The real-time data that we get from monitoring around the spent fuel storage, that's a monthly report that's published and is on our website right now, and you can get a daily average of the gamma radiation levels around the spent fuel storage.
Just a quick follow-up, if I may.
Representative Benson.
Thank you for your indulgence here. But the question I'm really asking is whether or not the information you are presently collecting would be useful for citizens living in the area, and whether or not you are acquainted with the kind of monitoring reporting that some states do have at present as compared to what you're doing. It'd be nice to get a monthly report, but if people don't understand what it is or it's not in a form that an ordinary citizen could understand, I don't see why you're providing such information would be at all useful in regards to the citizens living around the plant. That's my concern.
Dr. Flaherty, Madam Chair, Representative, thank you. Yeah, absolutely. The data, unless you have some sort of reference available, is just a bunch of numbers. And the majority of the data that we receive is below the lab's detection levels. So you've got a bunch of numbers, but the actual values are below that. So again, it unless you have a background and understanding of it, it doesn't mean anything to the general public. As far as what other states do, I'm not aware of states that are publishing real-time data or if they have that type of accessibility. I know that Wisconsin does monitoring around Prairie Island as well. Their monitoring program is similar to what we do, and their public information on their website is similar to what we have.
Thank you. Representative Clark, do we want to move on?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I think we should probably hear from Xcel.
Pardon?
I think we should probably hear from Xcel.
Okay, Xcel. Patrick Flowers, I believe, is here. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name.
Madam Chair, my name is Pat Flowers. I'm the Water Quality Manager for Xcel Energy and their Environmental Services Group.
And go ahead with your testimony.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak with you very quickly on this issue. Let me get to the point. The issues raised by the HF 3519 were all issues that were raised in the development of our Certificate of Need and through the PUC's proceedings. And that's one of the reasons why, as a part of those proceedings, Xcel agreed to do some additional study work, partly to address some of the very issues you're already considering as a part of this bill, and that is to go back and look at the body of data that exists not just within the company but outside the company, compile that in a report, and then make recommendations to the PUC on what additional work really needs to be done in order to improve our thermal monitoring within the river and looking at our monitoring programs around the plant, both for tritium as well as air emission issues. At this point, our current program, as you just heard from the Minnesota Department of Health, for air monitoring is considered to be a detailed and thorough program. The NRC reviews that. We have to comply with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission requirements, and we have been doing that. We also report every year through our radiological and environmental monitoring program, both to the NRC and to the state, the results of all of the data that we've collected over the course of the year, and make sure that that's publicly available to those who are interested in it. So there's nothing that's been hidden or done behind the, you know, behind the curtain here. This has all been done out front. The PUC ordered us to do those additional studies, and those are already underway, one of which is due in June, the other is due in December of this year. And it seems a little premature to initiate a group to basically either completely in parallel look at the same information and try to come to conclusions, or to assume that the studies we're going to provide are already completed, the results are known, and we need to do something different than that. Quite honestly, we're going through these studies with the eye and with the attitude of we need to see where the data leads us, not lead the data where we'd like to go. And I think it'd be good to allow us to get through that process and then decide at some point in the future, does something like this need to be done because either what we did wasn't adequate for the public safety, or it's adequate, maybe needs a little additional stakeholder involvement as we finalize what we do moving forward. Some other issues, you know, are the storage casks don't leak. They're watertight. They are sealed. What happens is that the nuclear emissions, most of which are absorbed by the cask material itself, there's a small amount of that that still escapes the cask because not every bit of gamma radiation is stopped by shielding. So there is some minor amounts of radiation that do come from that. The monitoring, as the Department of Health just pointed out, for the most part comes back as being not detectable by the current state of the art, if you will, for emissions monitors. And the same is true with our own equipment. We don't have any detectable levels of radiation coming from this material by what we monitor with our systems. We're interested in making sure we protect the public health and safety of those around us, and we're very aware of the fact that we've got a very important Indian community that sits right next door to us, and harm to them is harm to us as far as we're concerned. And so our monitoring programs and the way we go about handling our systems and managing our plant is to protect their health as well as the rest of the states, because it could all be impacted by this plant if something really does go wrong. Regarding the water monitoring, the thermal issues with the plant have been very long-standing. They date back to well before the plant started, and the NSP at the time and now Xcel Energy has been studying the thermal impacts of this plant for better than 30 years now. We do all sorts of biological monitoring within the river as well as thermal monitoring down the river beyond even what is our compliance point that was established by the Pollution Control Agency at the Lock and Dam. We know what thermal impacts we are having on the river, and the PCA as well as DNR in their studying and looking at the work we've done and some of their own independent studies hasn't brought out any smoking gun to say the plant's doing something that they've not identified. DNR even has its own report that dates back to the 1990s that was looking specifically at how fish down in Lake Pepin were not affected by the thermal plume from the plant, and it concluded they weren't being affected by it at all. So, you know, it's one of those situations where there's a lot of different, very complex things going on. We really need to put the information and the study material and the research together, not just the research we do, but the research that's been done by universities across the country and internationally, and decide where does that lead us to manage that program, the monitoring of the river going forward, and what makes sense for our thermal limits that the Pollution Control Agency establishes for the plant. All of that's going to be included in these reports we're working on. And I think if we give that time so that we can see what those reports are, and they're going to be open and public documents that are available for public participation, I think we'll see what we really need to do rather than kind of doing a shotgun approach at this point and assuming that we already know the answer when we don't.
Thank you. Representative Severson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just to follow up with that testimony, I think one of the issues here that we deal with is the fear of the unknown. And I think there's been a large body of information that has been gathered over the course of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission's task in this process that validates this information. And I think one of the issues that we were just looking at, it says, Xcel has demonstrated radiation emissions from Prairie Island plant and its proposal operating levels are significantly below NRC radiation doses. The NRC limits are protective of human health and consistent with a large body of research in the health risks of low-dose radiation. These limits will protect human health following implementation of extended power uprate. So this is from the administrative law judge. So his findings are such that I think if we're going forward with a study of this in this bill as it's currently set is preemptive, especially in view of the research that is being currently done by Excel. The studies and the numbers will be out, and I think if those were to legitimize some sort of research more targeted, I think would be legitimate at that point. But I think this is probably a little premature. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Flowers, I want to thank you for coming down. I want to thank Excel for the good work that you do. I know you you work hard. You want to be a good neighbor. It sounds like you have been good neighbors. I've often said that I would rather live in the shadow of a nuclear power plant than in the shadow of a coal power plant, which we in Burnsville do. But I think, you know, sometimes part of being a good neighbor is doing things that maybe aren't your cup of tea, or maybe you think there's not so much purpose to this, or we're already doing this, but okay, if it makes the people who live on either side of you happy, yeah, let's have that block party or what. You know, we do these things when we're good neighbors. I hope as you participate in this working group to look at these issues, to help satisfy some of the concerns of the neighbors you want to be good neighbors to. I hope you will be very frank with them about any ideas that they have and the costs of those ideas moving forward, and do your job to be very frank about those costs, but also do your job to say, yeah, we can do that and it won't cost anything when you see those opportunities. So thanks for coming down. Thanks for being good neighbors, and I hope you're a good voice for your ratepayers on this committee. Thank you.
Thank you. And Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, if it's appropriate now, I'd like to move the H351981 amendment, and I believe staff's got it. Maybe they can pass it out. I can speak to the amendment. This is a little different approach than what we've seen before. It deals with lifting the nuclear prohibition discussion nuclear plants in the state of Minnesota, but it's got an idea here I think that we all would agree is a good idea, that we wouldn't even lift the moratorium now, but we would lift it not for 5 years. That would allow the committee structure to have fruitful discussions about the possibility of looking at if there's some way in the future that this may make sense for Minnesotans, and it allows plenty of time for that discussion to take place and plenty of time for future legislature to decide if it's the appropriate action or not. And I'm thinking, Representative Clark, that this would be a great bipartisan effort to move your bill forward. See, you know, it's got to go through rules. It would then, I think, have a chance for bipartisan support in rules to move forward. So, Madam Chair, and I'd ask for a roll call.
I have a concern that this bill is not germane. It expands the scope of this committee, the scope of this bill. It would add a new section to the bill that's not included in the bill. It in itself is an entire bill in itself. And I believe I could just rule that not germane. All right.
To that point, Madam Chair.
Boom.
Madam Chair.
We'll discuss it.
No. Yes, Mr. McNamara.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I'm not mistaken, there are no germaneness rules in the committee structure. I'm free to offer the amendment, it's not appropriate to rule it non-germane.
And Representative McNamara, I have here the rules of the House must be observed in committee if they're applicable. Amendment offered in committee must be on a subject that is within the jurisdiction of the committee. Whether an amendment is on a subject that is within the jurisdiction of the committee is a question to be decided by the person chairing the meeting, who may put the question to the committee.
So,
yes, Mr. Representative McNamara.
Well, Madam Chair, if we're not supposed to be dealing with nuclear power, why is this bill before us?
think we're discussing.
If it's in an inappropriate committee, we should just lay the bill on the table and get it back to the right table,
Madam
or
Chair.
To the right committee. If this, I didn't bring this bill forward. This bill deals with the nuclear power plant that's located right next to my community. My bill certainly deals with the nuclear power plant. In my 7 years, I've never had somebody say an amendment that clearly fits within the scope of what this bill is, rule it non-germane. This isn't an amendment that deals with something completely unrelated. I mean, if it's not supposed to be in the jurisdiction of this committee, let's end the committee now and go on to Representative Clark's other bill. But this is related to the bill that's before us.
Madam Chair.
Yes, the bill before us has to do with the emissions from a power plant, not about the construction or licensing of a power plant. Representative Clark?
Madam Chair, you said it well. It's a totally different part of the law. We're dealing with 116C, and your statute would be amending 216B, a totally different part of the law. And I do think, Madam Chair, that you did rule correctly. Just want to support your ruling.
Madam Chair.
Representative McNamara.
Well, it's just a question for the bill author. Representative Clark, in your term longer than mine, have you ever seen an amendment related to a bill ruled non-germane by the chair of the committee?
You want me to answer that?
Yes.
Yes, I have. I can't recall one, but I do remember there were times when that occurred, and I actually can't cite the time, but I have been on a committee where that has happened.
Okay,
not frequently.
Madam
Ackland?
Chair, I'm going to appeal the ruling of the chair. I'm imagining it's just like the House floor, and ask for a roll call vote. And I want folks to know that the bill presenter says she believes it's happened before, can't remember when. In my 7 years, I've never had this happen. And if this is what we're going to do, squish the voice of the minority to this extent, we've got a bill before us that needs to go to rules. We've all got important stuff to be doing. We're dealing with a bill that's supposed to go before rules. I've got an amendment clearly germane, and if you want to rule it non-germane, then the rest of your colleagues are going to have to stand behind your vote. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Representative McNamara. We all have our opinions. And on that basis, we'll take a vote on that. There's been a motion to challenge the ruling of the chair regarding whether this amendment is germane. And we'll pause a moment to take Representative Morgan.
Yes, Madam Chair. On the floor, as I understand it, maybe you could clarify, a yes vote supports the ruling of the chair, and a no vote opposes the ruling of the chair. Is that correct, Madam Chair?
So, and thank you, Representative Morgan. So on that basis, although we're going to take a roll call.
Yeah,
yes.
Lane?
Yes.
Clark?
Yes.
Benson?
Yes.
Bly?
Yes.
Hayden?
Yes.
Huntley?
Yes.
McFarlane?
No.
McNamara?
No.
Morgan?
Yes.
Rosenthal?
Yes.
Saylor? Scott?
No.
Severson?
No.
We have 8-4, so the ruling of the chair stands.
Madam Chair, unless there are any other witnesses or questions from the committee, I would move that House File 3519 be recommended to pass and be referred, I believe, to the Committee on Government Operations.
Madam Chair.
Okay, Representative Scott.
Yeah, I just had one more question for XL, if they could come back down.
Mr. Flowers, Representative Scott first.
Okay, thank you. Actually, may I have two quick questions? But the first one is, do you see this proposal, this study, as being largely duplicative of what you're already doing?
Madam Chair, Representative, yes.
Mr. Flowers.
Okay, and my second question is,
is, do you have employees that live in or around the power plant itself that would be living downriver or downwind? And I guess my question is, you know, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. If you feel like the possible emissions, anything like that, is any sort of a deterrent from people, you know, choosing to live downwind or downriver for your own employees.
Mr. Flowers.
Madam Chair, Representative, we have a large number of our employees, both who work for me as well as who work at the power plant, that live in Red Wing and who live just across the river in Hager Heights and Diamond Bluff.
Okay, thank you.
And Representative Severson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the bill author and possibly Excel at this point, I think if we're going to take a vote on this bill and we're moving this bill out, I think it's incumbent upon us as a committee to have some kind of number in the blank space for the fiscal note and where those dollars are coming from, because my estimation is those dollars are coming directly from the ratepayers. And if it's a duplicative study, they need to understand that we have the means that we're extracting from their pockets early with that, in my estimation, justification, because that report is going to come out later. I think for full disclosure, a number would be good so we can talk to our ratepayers and say, hey, this is the move of the committee to have this put together in a transparent form.
Representative Clark?
Sure, Madam Chair. Well, obviously, I totally agree with you that we need a number in there. We don't have it yet. We're waiting. The fiscal note request has been made, and it's going to go at least to one or two finance committee hearings. You know, it'll be in the main finance committee, and there'll be an opportunity even in the next committee to have that number put in there. I hope we'll have it by then. And maybe to address your other point, this is not a duplicative study. Excel is not pulling together the stakeholders in the way that we are talking about here. And I thought, as was mentioned earlier, in the name of being a good neighbor at least, but this is also a very important public health issue, we need to have the stakeholders who are most concerned at the table. We need them there to help advise and make sure that a full-blown study is done, and that the kinds of questions that are in this bill are really addressed in a very meaningful way. I thought some of the discussion was very helpful here today, and I hope Excel was listening, in terms of helping make sure that our own health department is able to provide information in the kinds of language that makes sense to people, that they can understand, that it isn't too scientific in the way that most persons couldn't grab a hold of. So I think that Excel, actually, I would hope that you would appreciate the kind of stakeholder involvement we're willing to offer here. And this is going to be a fairly small investment, I believe. I think we're talking, Representative Severson, something in the neighborhood between $50,000 and $100,000. That's my guess. I don't know. The health department has to come forward and tell us. We are bringing together a good number of people who represent people downstream, and particularly of concern to me and always has been is the folks who live very nearby. They are very clear in their statement today, and if you read their letter, they don't feel like they have been informed. For a long time, they have felt like they have not received adequate information. One of the very major issues that is a public health issue is cumulative health impact of this kind of exposures that people are experiencing. And that is something that I'm sure they'll be bringing to the table. They talked about it in their letter. We don't really have that kind of data, and I think the health department was clear in saying they don't collect all the kind of data that we are asking to be available here. So, members, Mr. Representative Severson, I just tell you that's my response to your point here. There's nothing duplicative about this. Bringing people together is not happening on Excel's watch.
Okay, and Representative, excuse me.
Yeah, just more? Madam Chair, to that point, and Representative Clark, Madam Chair, at this point, what would be the harm in allowing this to be tabled until that study comes out from Excel, where we can better target the results of their findings? Why would we not want to wait until that transpired?
Representative Severson, if someone in your family was pregnant and living within 600 yards of an emitting facility with some of the kinds of information that we've heard here today, would you want to wait? You know, I mean, I just think we've asked this community to wait for several generations. They're tired of waiting. They have been very patient. We have demanded that they have high-level nuclear waste you know, on their doorstep, hopefully somewhat protected, but we know that it's not totally protected. And we are not providing the kind of monitoring that they've been asking for a long time. So I think that we've waited long enough. This is an opportunity for all of us here to be courageous enough to say we can improve and we can provide the people with what they've been asking for, literally begging for a long time. This was before I came to the legislature. I heard about the fact that people really didn't know. And I believe they had a right to know. And what we're asking here is that they sit down with the company and all of the other stakeholders, people who live downstream, are part of this group of people who are asking. It's not just the tribal community. And we want to make sure that the counties and the others are able to provide proper information to their own constituents. So I don't think we need to wait anymore. It's really time to act, and I would encourage the members to vote for the bill.
Thank you. And Representative Morgan.
Yeah, I just want to be clear, Madam Chair, thank you very much, that if there is a fiscal note for this bill, that's going to be a cost that's going to be paid here at the legislature out of some committee's budget, not by the ratepayers. And I don't know how that's going to get out of Finance Committee. But as I understand, the cost of putting this working group together is funded through the legislature. Maybe the author of the bill can respond to that.
Representative Clark.
Well, my understanding is that this will come from the development fund, renewable development account, and that's what will be. That's where the money will be coming from.
Okay. On that note, Representative Clark renews. Okay, Representative McNamara.
Based on the proceedings, Madam Chair, I want a roll call.
A roll call has been requested, and
on the bill.
This is Representative Clark renewing her motion that House File 3519 be recommended to pass as amended and be referred to the Committee on Finance. A roll call. Yes.
Lane?
Yes.
Clark?
Yes.
Benson?
Yes.
Bly?
Yes.
Hayden?
Yes.
Huntley?
Yes.
McFarland?
No.
McNamara?
No.
Morgan?
Yes.
Rosenthal?
Yes.
Scott?
No.
Severson?
All right, we have 8-4, and so the bill passes as amended. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members.
All right. thank you. My ears are wonderful.
When are the results coming out? In July timeframe? The results from there.
From yesterday, March 16th meeting, Representative Lane, would you like to move those minutes? Any further discussion on those minutes? If not, all those in favor of approving the minutes signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion prevails and the minutes are adopted. Is there anyone here today who wanted to talk? Oh, we're leaving in a few minutes. Never mind. We went over time. I just wanted to announce we had said on the schedule today that if anybody wanted to continue to talk with us about the housing bill, we would do that. But, you know, we're bringing that bill back again next week, and then we'll be on the agenda, and you'll be able to have a chance to provide testimony then. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.